です。
Welcome to Pilotless, episode 501.5, Agumon and Feedback.
That's intro part one, Feedback.
Pilotless is your critically nostalgic analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I have the crest of awkward, noisy recordings made in Israel.
I'm Ashley, and I have the crest of I'm in Israel, woo!
There's also Asher in the background.
Asher's here.
Do I also have a crest of being in Israel?
You're the crest of rabbi.
Crest of rabbi.
But I don't...
You're developing the crest of rabbi.
Okay.
Okay, let's dive into the feedback. We have a lot of stuff to get through this episode, but we have Ash to chime in the background occasionally.
Chime.
just to prove that he's actually here. So starting off with follow-up first. There are some things that I realized afterwards, after recording the episode, mainly because I've been going back through and watching the episodes in Japanese to get gifts and note down gifts and get gifts and also practice in Japanese. So there's some things. First of all, I wrote this down as a rant, like, because we talked a little bit about how the Digimon being partnered, like, that then like how they vilified your Mojomon doesn't really make much sense because he's just trying to escape, and then they want them to escape the digital world. That's what they do, but then they get mad at him for doing that. But the thing that I found really terrible going back and watching it is that, like, they condemning every Digimon I come across for, like, being there is so frustrating, because the entire framing of the season is that that's what happens with Agumon. That, like, Agumon is vilified for being there, and Marcus is like, no, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, once we show compassion to Agumon and bring him to the team, he actually is a productive member of society, whatever.
Yeah.
Has analogs for, like, not vilifying people in the criminal justice system. Anyway, and then that's just, like, completely bad. Like, Marcus, you know, just, like, once their other Digimon involved, it's like, none of that. Like, they just...
I mean, I guess with Biomon later?
Yeah, that's a third arc. So we're ways from that. But anyway, yeah, that's just another thing that I found really frustrating going back and watching episode one. Another thing I also really liked, we didn't really mention this at all, because I don't think the moment really stood out much in the dub, but when they're wandering around the Digimon in episode 5, when Marcus has gone there and is trying to find Jumojumon and hasn't run into Thomas yet, and there's a couple, like a kind of a montage of him going around seeing different things in the Digimon world, different
weird
things.
Yes, Breath of the Wild joke.
Yeah, that was from. I don't think it's posted to Twitter yet. Anyway, spoilers. But there's a song in the Japanese version that is really good that is played there, I think, the first time in the series. And it worked really well because it shows, like, a wonder of him just, like, without the music in the dub version. It's just like, okay, whatever, just wondering. But then, like, it shows this, like, I'll play the song for you later so you can hear it. But it's like,
great.
It definitely gets across the ceiling that, like, there is, like, a curiosity of exploring the digital world that makes sense with Marcus's eventual character growth and where he ends up. Anyway.
Marcus has character growth?
I don't know if it's character growth, at least what he does in the epilogue. Also, there's a moment in the episode 2 where Yoshino has orders to erase Marcus's family's memory, and then just randomly she doesn't. And it's like, whatever, this feels contrived. And going back and watching that after seeing stuff from the third arc mainly, from episode 12,
yeah.
I was like, oh, no, I guess that's actually Samson realizing who Marcus's family is.
Mm.
That's totally explained and actually fits. Ash just nodded his head. May not have been connected to that at all. But
I think he's playing Digimon Lynx.
Yeah, he's playing Digimon Lynx. Also, it's pretty... I mean, the fact that... I think we actually complained later on that Samson does not seem like as frustrated about his mission as he should be, given that there's like stuff with people being lost in the digital world. But... So that's still there, like... I think once they get back, Samson should be a lot more like, no, this is not something that, like, even though you did your mission successfully, you should be not, like, should be much more angry about it. But, I don't know, at least does fit in track that, like, for them to go to the digital world this early on, had to be without Samson's permission, had to be while he wasn't there. Anyway, we also got some blog posts from around the internet. This one, first one, is actually recent. It was from @ChrisCarmi on Twitter. And they said they made this blog post kind of inspired by seeing our going through Savers, and they wanted to go and watch along too. And so they ran up these blog posts. Oh, they only written one blog post so far. hopefully they keep it up because it's pretty cool. And they do like episodic walkthrough of like their impressions of each episode, and it's really cool. And I have a couple of thoughts to read from there, but Chris Carmi's site in general was really cool. So it's called digidogs.net. So I had first seen them on Twitter because they run this Digimon store where they get products from the official merchandise stores in Japan, and then like you can buy individual items, like specific items. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this, but it seems like magically I have so much stuff in stock. I think they like actually go to Japan and like get tons of stuff and bring it back and then sell it, and you'd expect there to be tons of markup for that, but there's really not much markup. Like, it's like things aren't that expensive. That's really cool. But it seems like the original purpose of their site, digidogs.net, is like cataloging the Groom online, sorry, the Goblin online. And like they have every piece of merch from like, you know, the 20
Goblin
years.
Goblin is the best. Oh my goodness.
It's so
cool.
All
these plushies.
The Muslim like from 1999.
Oh snap.
It's really cool. And they have it for like each of the evolution forms. So like this is the Goblin page you're looking at now.
Some dedication.
It's really awesome. So
many
different
things. I don't
have
much dedication to anything.
I love the focus on just like the Gundam online.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Anyway, but this they had in addition to that, this blog going through the first 5 episodes of Savers, and so I wrote down some highlights. So in episode 2, they said Masaru wins without much trouble, and after speaking with the fisherman dude, he decides that he wants to be part of Dats, even though he hated it at the beginning of the episode. Okay, a little sudden.
Nah.
I forgot, like, I think we just kind of forgot, like, whatever, like, it has to be.
There's some things I roll with in the Digimans.
Yeah. I think looking back, I think of that as making more sense. I think in the moment it really didn't make much sense. Because it's like, I feel like Marcus's being frustrated with that was the most contrived part. And so it's like, okay, it makes sense. Like, it's a perfect situation for him. He wants to just fight powerful things.
Yeah.
It's kind of the ideal thing for him.
Yeah.
So on that level, I was like, well, it's inevitable that he comes around and realizes this is the perfect opportunity for him.
He's like, you know how I can change this organization I hate? From the inside.
But he hasn't, we'll get to that. There's some comments from Adam from System Restore about that. We'll get to that. Episode 3, another comment, partners, Toma and Masaru, fail at being partners, so only then do Yoshino and Agumon succeed in defeating Digimon, which were Numemon in the sewers. Finally, she shows some skills, but it's against such pathetic enemies that I'm not too impressed. I hadn't considered this. This is kind of like an inversion of the Mini Numemon thing. That, like, the only time we actually see Yoshino be successful is against Numemon.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, I hadn't really considered that. That's, like, the one time he actually, like, is shown to be competent on her own. In this arc, at least. And
yeah.
I think in the next one, too. Yeah, in the next one, too.
Okay.
Not that with the third one, she has a moment.
Yeah, she gets a moment.
by episode, like, 15.
Yeah.
At least it's not like episode, like, 30 or something in Frontier. But
no. I'm still angry.
Yeah. And the last comment that I wanted to highlight from, there's lots more comments, you can go check out the blog with the link in the show notes to it. This last comment I wanted to highlight was episode 5. And Chris Garmy said, partners Toma and Masaru fail at being partner.
Nope, you copied it.
I copied it twice.
Good job, Jeff.
How what did I want to highlight from episode 5? I don't remember. It's too late. We didn't do a lot more to get through, so sorry. It was something I wanted to comment on episode 5, but I didn't copy it correctly. Anyway, okay, so we also, I went through, in other seasons I tried to read, so Adam Pulver, who runs the System Restore blog, and is also now on the With Will podcast, basically did, if you don't know what System Restore, he basically went through and like wrote blog posts reviewing each episode of Digimon, of the dub, specifically. And he did this a long time ago. These Savers episode, Data Storm episode, they're from 2013. So I think he finished. I think he maybe was still doing Fusion when we started the podcast. Maybe a little bit. Maybe he already finished.
So he was pre-podcast, the actual
pre-podcast boom.
Yeah.
So I think when we were doing Tamers, I tried to keep up and like read his reviews before we covered it. So then if I had things to talk, but like I fell way behind and like I didn't have time to read these before we recorded, but then I read them afterwards. And I was like, there's some interesting things to point out. He words some things pretty concisely and some interesting points that I want to highlight here because. Draw more attention, other things in the Digimon community. So this is from his episode 1 review, and it's talking about Marcus, and he says, every season is very quick to make it clear to us that its respective Gogglehead is an idiot, they might be a different breed of idiot like Takato. And there might even be a disclaimer stating that the idiot may be capable of extreme brilliance like Mikey. You haven't even mentioned Mikey yet.
I don't even know who the heck Mikey is.
For all the Goggleheads we've met so far, the closest comparison would be Davis. Both are very simple-minded and both have this incredible knack for filtering out meaningless fluff and determining what's right. But while Davis was arbitrary and pieced his wisdom seemingly from thin air, Marcus has what is best deemed a Marcus Code. It's a set of strict tenets that he follows religiously. I think it's an interesting way of framing things, because there are some things that seem pretty similar to Davis, but whereas Davis would just contrive, like, things just happen for him, he's just rewarded for random stuff. Like, Marcus at least has a strict code of ethics. I'm not even finishing, I don't like his code.
Asher is making such skeptical faces at us right now.
But this really raised me, is like, I don't... This quote-unquote Marcus code is what I really don't like.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tried to bring it up in his, like, he has platitudes that I'm like, I think these platitudes brought to their logical conclusion are just bad.
Yeah. See, I don't know how to reconcile this, because I think his, like, his gangster, yakuza, bancho, like, personality is, I think, fun. I think when he actually has, like, platitudes that we're supposed to, like, not find troubling and problematic is when I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, when they're actually, like, I mean, the Data Squad Digimon, sorry, the dub opening says, like, I forget exactly what the lyrics are, but it's, like, never back down, never surrender,
yeah.
And stuff. And it's like, okay, that's a fun song, but that's not a good, healthy attitude to take away from
attitude.
It. Because, like, Digimon is frustrated, has been confused about that many times over, where it's been, like this whole stuff with Takuya and, like, accepting, like, midway through the season, he learned to accept surrender. And then later on, I was like, no, we can never surrender. And it's like, no,
yeah.
you've regressed.
Yeah.
So
Digimon never knows what it wants.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, and so many of Marcus's platitudes are so sexist, and so unhealthy from a confrontational perspective. There's many things wrong.
He is very boy.
He's very boy, and to be clear, a lot of the stuff is not like a dub creation. Some of the stuff, like the toots and the doll face.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
that
I mean, they don't say literally toots and doll face in Japanese.
Does he say something equally derogatory?
I think he uses language that is what you would expect from this kind of, like, bancho, or, like, not yakuza, but, like, kid gang.
Asher's so intrigued.
It's called juvenile delinquent.
Juvenile delinquent, that's the word, yeah.
You couldn't think of the English equivalent?
I don't know. I was...
Yusuke Urameshi.
Okay.
You've never seen Yu Yu Hakusho.
As a main character?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think there's stuff that, like... there's definitely things in Japanese. I don't think it was in this. I think it was actually later on when he's dealing with Bioman.
Yeah.
Where in Japanese, like, one of the lines was definitely like, "Otoko wa otoko desu," like, just like, you are a boy. So it's like, it's not like that sexism stuff is, it's not entirely invented by the dub. I think there's lines of it, but, like, I feel like it's not easy.
What was he trying to imply with that line?
I forget exactly.
At what point was it said?
I think it was when it was like you need to be a man now, kind of thing.
Okay.
And so, like, yeah, there's... I'm really conflicted, because on the one hand, I like the absurdity of him being this, like, juvenile delinquent Digimon protagonist who punches Digimon and stuff, but also, like, if you think of his platitudes too hard, they fall down. And we're going to get to more Marcus stuff with our weekly question.
Always more Marcus stuff.
Anyways, so more comments from that. This is later on in Adam's review, episode 1. All of the employees have Digimon partners. That shows that they're sympathetic to Digimon and are just trying to keep the two sides from hurting each other, right? Not quite. Not only are most of the Digimon adats employed as servants, save for Kudamon, who just sits around in Samson's neck being awesome, but human prejudice still drives their actions. Of course Agumon attacked the hamburger place, he's a monster. Of course Agumon can't eat people food, he's a monster. Of course Agumon beat up all those poor schmoes, he's a monster. No way Marcus McPunchy would do something like that. Marcus seems to sniff this out quickly and dismisses them as not jiving with the Marcus code. So this reflects,
I mean,
a lot of things.
That part is fine. I agree that I just think everybody in this show is crap.
So I think, like, this reflects, we ended up coming to a similar conclusion of being,
yeah,
finding the partnership stuff disconcerting, and how it's like, I think before you also mentioned it, it's like hypnosis, but good, but also the way that it's quote unquote good seems troubling. But I didn't consider the way Adam read this is that Marcus does not like this aspect of bats. I didn't really get that. Did you?
I mean, it's hard to jive with, like, maybe he... Sure. Like, in the beginning, that's definitely what it seems like. Like, he's like, why do you want to take Agumon away? This doesn't seem like a good reason. You have a Digimon. Why can't I have a Digimon? Mm. Like, whatever. But then, like, because it's not carried through,
right,
the rest
like,
of it is...
It's like he completely... Like, once he's like, yes, it's good to join DATS so I can fight things, then he's completely okay with everything DATS does.
Yeah, like, he doesn't question, like, any of the things that they fight, so... Whatever.
Ash is nodding his head. Yeah, so that's, like, I kind of wish there were more of a through line on that, because I think that is going to be some kind of through line through the season, that, like, there is something not... There's, like, unsettling about this partnership of the of DATS. But then it's weird that Marcus is totally on board with it after, whatever.
Yes, he could be better.
We'll see how
he's
that
not smart.
On. Yeah, he's not smart.
He's not smart.
And another comment, we should be flying through quickly, but another comment from Adam's episode 2 review. So he said, Marcus argues that Agumon's crime of interacting with humans is also being broken by all of their partners. The response is terrible and incredibly troubling coming from Lalamon. DATS considers their partnerships wrong, but justifiable if it maintains order. So that analogy that, like Marcus was saying, like, aren't you also broken the law? And then Lalamon's analogy was, like, isn't it okay to speed to catch a criminal?
Yeah.
Like, we talked about, like, oh, well, that seems like, I don't know, we had, like, a... One
we
of
had
weird
an
track.
Accountability.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about, like, police accountability and stuff. But I think Adam's reading here is really interesting, because it's not... The way Lalamon frames that is, like, it's okay to speed to catch a Digimon implies that, like, dealing with Digimon is wrong. And it's okay to do something wrong to catch things that people are doing even wronger. It's not a, like...
I mean, yeah.
Right. So it's not even, like... Digimon are cool, we're actually okay, there are some of us that are rampaging we need to take down, but otherwise we're cool. Instead it's like using Digimon as a necessary evil to take another Digimon.
Yes.
So yeah, that's
I agree that metaphor is troubling on many levels.
Yeah. And Adam also said, well, Yoshi has an air of confidence about her, at least when not totally exasperated. She's basically there to demonstrate that DATS can't do its job without Marcus.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I think that's doubly true once Thomas
boy.
Is there too. Like, once Marcus and Thomas are there, like, she's there to be like.
But theoretically, DATS has been doing something for 6 months
somehow,
without Thomas.
Somehow. Yeah.
Or Marcus.
Yeah.
So, that's what frustrates me is that, like, there is an implication that Yoshi was able to do something.
Yeah.
For
and
6 months at least.
Right. Unless, like, yeah, it doesn't.
And I could see that Yoshi and Thomas would make a good team as, like, two DATS agents that have to go do stuff together.
I didn't write down these comments ahead, but there was stuff that I think Adam wrote in his episode 4 review, the one where Thomas and Marcus had to pair it up, that basically, like, on their own, Thomas does great. On his own, Marcus does great. But paired up is only when they fail. So, like, Marcus has a track record, I think, at that point of, like, defeating 3 out of 4 Digimon perfectly. Mm-hmm. And it's only one of them that he can't defeat because of, like, a type disadvantage.
Yeah.
And so, like, the idea that, like, oh, well, Marcus is an easy time to team up with Thomas, like, it doesn't actually benefit either of them to be teamed up. They're, like, they're fine on their own.
No, it's definitely just a lesson
right.
thing.
It's just a lesson thing, so, like, whatever.
I think even Samson knew that. Like, he was just, like, clearly.
I love this comment of, like, when Thomas is like, I don't understand why you're teaming me up, and he's like, well, here's your first mission. Figure it out yourself. And Adam's last comment from this episode 2 review was, as irksome as the idea of Digimon being able to load into a Digivice is, it makes sense in this world's context, and it's one of those things that just has to be written out. And there's some more stuff about that. I was kind of surprised. I didn't really think there's anything wrong with Digimon being loaded into Digivices. I kind of like it a little bit. I don't like how it's so similar to Pokeballs.
Yeah, it's a little similar to Pokeballs, is what I was going to say.
It's a little similar to Pokeballs, but it's like, once you, like, accept that, okay, like, you can't be, like, unique on every aspect... I think it works pretty well.
I think
season.
Like, we're just so used to either digital monster, like, monsters or digital things generally just being able to be held in a digital space. Like, Tri's
right.
doing that now.
Yeah, I guess Tri's doing it with the laptops.
Yeah.
So
that's why it feels, that might be part of why it feels less weird.
It feels more natural nowadays, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah, because really only the Pokeball similarity is what frustrates me. And even that is, like, it's only because it's like, well, that happens and Agumon doesn't want to go in it. And then there's Lalamon puts people to sleep, puts Digimon to sleep by singing. Like, I'm like, those three things together.
Those things
are
very
Pokemon. It's
a
little too Pokemon.
A little bit.
We should move on to the weekly question. I guess we're running really long on this, so we'll have time to get through, but I think we'll go through faster. Anyway, the weekly question was, is Marcus a good boy?
Asher's opinion is no, by the way. Just
I think everyone's opinion on the podcast is no so far. Okay, so we're going to go through. We have some Tumblr responses, some Twitter responses, and then some through email as well. So first, on Tumblr, Shiny Happy Digistar said, he's the best boy.
Whoa.
Fandom-Jumper said, yes.
All right, everybody's very resounding yes so far.
We have a bunch of comments from Twitter. So May Shinjimon/@AngentEarsmon/May from Austin Translation Mon just said yes, !! And then followed up with, because of how much he cares about his family and families in general, his family is his number one priority. And honestly, so is everybody else's family. He wants everybody to have a great family life and he'll fight for it. Literally.
Asher can't even right now. Just can't even.
Ash so can't even, he broke Digimon list.
Yeah.
Alex Dunn at Alex of the Key. That's not. Wait, it's Alex Dunn at Axel of the Key.
Oh, tricky.
See, I always thought of his name as being a key, as a Kingdom Hearts reference, so I was confused when I was like, wait, it's Alex, not Axel. Anyway,
yeah, it actually is, isn't it?
So, and that makes sense. Just, I never. Anyway. So he just said, ..
No.
Steve at Homoneurotic. At the Homoneurotic said, not really, too arrogant. If he was a dumb hothead who had to learn to be a better person, I'd be more forgiving. I could be remembering wrong, but I don't think he ever really grows at all. I think that is a key part of our frustration with him, is he doesn't learn from mistakes, or like...
He's just like, punching the Meramon didn't really work. But I need punching to work, so, like, I'm just going to get to a state where punching works.
It's not the learning about punching. Learning about punching, it's fine. Like, he can just punch all the time. It's the learning about, like, I mean, I guess it's in the next arc, so we're kind of spoiling things, but for the next arc, when the stuff happens with Yoshino, and, like, we see, like, his Marcus code stuff, like, directly leads to condescension and... You know, like, limiting the potential of other people on the team is when it's like, and he doesn't learn from that. Like, in the end, they were right to distrust Yoshino and stuff. That's the stuff that's like, and his tendency to protect everyone, you know, is kind of saying towards them.
To protect everyone. It's better if he's like, I can protect you, but also I give you the tools to protect you. So, like, it's better if he would at least teach or, like... give confidence to other people. There's a way that there are people who are very confident in themselves can give that confidence to other people rather than just being like, just trust me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Like, he doesn't inspire them. He just does it for himself. And I think there's also tons of implicit sexism to who he feels like he needs to protect. Like, he doesn't really... Like, the way he plays that with Thomas, it's not about feeling like he needs to protect him. It's just like, I'll help you.
Yeah. He's just like, I'm better than you.
Okay, he wants to be better than him, but like, when Thomas is in a position of vulnerability, he helps carry him. When Yoshino is in a position of vulnerability, he's like, I'll fight for you. Yes. So, like, yeah, I think we end up seeing, like, it's frustrating on so many sexism levels. Anyway, at Tokujo said, the infamous Tokujo, at Tokujo said, he is a good boy, but he's also dumb. the Phantom Geek at the Sonic Geek said, yes, Marcus is the best punchy boy. And then they also clarified, followed up with, what I like best is not so much Marcus himself, but the idea of the humans, even in some small way, getting in and directly fighting alongside their partner. Though he is cool. I don't know. That Keynes was not right. Though he is cool. Plus, he lands a solid hit on an ultra-level Digimon, and how can you not love that?
I'm fine with that part of him, to be honest.
I think that's what I keep thinking. He's like, I'm fine with... I like the aspect of him. I like the aspect of punching Digimon. I like the aspect of him being this juvenile delinquent, but other things. Anyway, Ramon Castro at Digimon Fan for Life said, yes, he is Digimon's One Punch Man. Punch emoji.
Punch emoji.
And,
Key fact.
And Digital VT Taichi at... I never know how to pronounce. At Austin Graham said, yes, he is. We also got some comments. So we also had Via With The Will. Tsuri said, I'd say yes, Marcus is a good boy, but he has a poor way of showing sometimes. I think that... Like, we kind of think that he has his heart in the right place. We also, and then he doesn't show it well. We also think that some of the way his heart, where his heart is troubling.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Like, that's fine. I think he has good intentions, generally.
But so many people who are super sexist or homophobic or racist or whatever have good intentions. Everyone has good intentions in their
mind. Everybody has good intentions in their mind. So that's
Yeah,
the troubling part.
Right, it's not like totally forgivable. We turn this into the Trial of Marcus Part 2.
Great.
And then we also got a email from Adam, same Adam from System Restore, and he said, "What makes Marcus a good boy is when he has a fierce loyalty and fights to protect both his family and anyone that proves themselves to him. He will also fight for justice when it really matters, which is sometimes a problem if he doesn't think that something, if he doesn't think something matters or society disagrees on what's just. For me, Marcus is the most pure and most successful of the typical Digimon protagonist archetype. He's..." In case Mike didn't pick it up, Ash just said false. "He's brave, impulsive, and not very bright. While Tai, Takato, and Haru show more overall depth and growth, it's due to contrary traits they start with or develop along the way. Marcus is pure Gogglehead start to finish, even if not literally, and his season tests him and forces him to focus his energy and personality better than similar leads like Davis, Takuya, and Mikey."
I mean, my problem with this comparison is, like, sure. I think it's kind of blah that, like, I don't know, whatever. Like, learning contrary traits to what you are as a person is, like, not a real thing normally. Like, you don't really change that much.
I was actually going to say the opposite, that it's more attuned to real life, that, like, as... to be a complex person in a realist, we actually need to, like, have multitudes, need to have different aspects, need to learn to develop things that balance your other excesses. But as fictional characters, it's sometimes more satisfying to just have someone who's a pure sun archetype and is not, like, balanced by becoming a healthy... Like, so in some ways, like, a real-life Marcus would not be a healthy person or a fun person to be around, but maybe they're a fun person to watch in fiction. Yeah.
I guess it's just, you know, like, fine with Marcus as being a thing, but, like, comparing him to Davis, Takuya, and Mikey, or Mikey, I don't know Mikey, but Davis and Takuya, I'm like, I feel like it's not that hard to be better than those two, like,
wait, but I feel like
as archetypes.
What he's trying to get here is, like, Davis and Takuya are these similar, like, don't learn contrary things to balance their personalities, cuddleheads, and that, like, Marcus is the best, yeah. Is, like, does that much better without them being as frustrating as two of them are. Takuya, I just feel like... I don't even feel like he's much on that line. I feel like Takuya, like I said in the season 4 wrap-up episode, it was just, like, feels like the average of all the other protagonists. Like, I don't remember him having, like, particularly...
Yeah.
...extreme personality or anything. Anyway, and Mikey, yeah, whatever. But yeah, I do think Tai has to, like, learn to, like, mellow out his attitude as we go along, whereas Marcus is, like... I think it's sometimes more fun to just watch someone who doesn't mellow out, who just, like, can be like that throughout.
Marcus is slowly, like, growing on me. I just am very resistant to, like, fully liking him.
I guess we need to have the final trial at the end of the season. Moving on to feedback, we got a general data score comment from Arctic Gato on Tumblr. And they said, "I just want to say that I've been listening to Potages for a while, and I'm really, really excited that you finally got to Savers, my favorite season. I hope you guys like Savers too, despite the not-so-great dub." So two things here. I'm glad people think that Savers is their favorite season. They're excited to get to it. Because, like, I guess for a while, I mean, I guess Tamers is a lot of people's favorite season, but, like, Frontier is so rarely someone's favorite season. So it's exciting to get things...
I can see why.
but yeah, I mean, I'm surprised to hear people say that they think the dub data squad is so bad, because, like...
I don't really feel that.
Yeah, it hasn't felt bad so far.
I feel pretty okay about it.
And there are definitely some things I like about the original Japanese a lot more, like the music. But I feel like there's
The music in the dub is good compared to other seasons.
Yeah, like, I feel like the first two seasons had, like, some highlight things, like Runaround. But other than that, it was, like, everything they played was...
Yeah.
No. So,
like, I think just the general background, generic battle music is more exciting.
Yeah, I guess so. And there's plenty of tracks in the dub that are not so great, but there are also some tracks in the Japanese version that are not so great that I don't mind not seeing, not hearing. but then there are also some great songs in the Japanese version that are not present here. But yeah.
I can easily see, after having watched 18 episodes of this season, being like, I see its flaws, but I also see why many people are endeared to this season.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of more layers that we've got to. I don't know if you've seen, like, I think there's a moment that I kind of forgotten how intense it is that I just seen Lost in Translation mom posting, that I've just seen Lost in Translation mom posting a screen caps of recently, and I'm like, oh, I forgot it went extreme. So, like,
I haven't seen many of their, I've seen some of them.
So there's some highlights later on that I think make the season stand out as a whole more than their seasons. Anyway, so these are specific comments we got about episode 501. Julian Solo on YouTube said, so I think this is in regards to our talking about Marcus being dismayed by Dats and our discussion of police brutality and stuff. And like the who watches the police.
Yes, who watches
like the accountability of police and stuff. And so Julian Solo just said, Marcus is literally an idiot though. I don't think he understands the complexity of police brutality. And I think that was kind of what I was trying to get at, that like you were making it about accountability and stuff, and I was like,
but
Marcus,
like,
isn't that.
He's not, but he's also like he has the innate, like how Adam says he does question it, and it's like he has the question in his mind. He just like can't logic through.
Well, I think the thing that he's questioning is not police brutality or accountability or anything like that. I think he's like, this is not something fair. There's some hypocrisy.
But he questions the like morality of it,
right.
Even if he can't quite articulate why.
Yeah. And Embermoto on the site, so Embermoto usually goes through and like posts their own reaction to the episodes, and there are some comments here that I thought were pretty interesting. So in episode 2, they said, I like Marcus's mom. It's a little strange that she is so chill that Agumon doesn't ask Marcus any questions about what is going on. And I think this is a forget where else I saw this. It's also a common thread that a lot of people like this aspect of like the family and Agumon. They all play together well and stuff. I think maybe it was also... It makes sense given later stuff. I think actually this is in Adam's review to Summer Store as well. But yeah, it makes sense given stuff that happens later. But also, like, it made me, like, this kind of made me realize that it reminds me kind of the ultimate... maybe it's because I've also been listening to the Going Digital podcast. I think they're about the point where they, in season one, where they're in the human world.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Matt is mysteriously okay with Gabumon.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, at the point, like, people speculate about that so much, like, well, he was originally Digidus and blah, blah, blah. I think that was just literally, like, Matt thought he was being so sneaky, and Stab was like, me, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's obvious, like, you're not hiding this very well at all. but I think, like, fans, for some reason, have latched onto that as being a thing that really resonated with them. Matt's dad seems so cool for being in on things. I feel like maybe this is the kind of the ultimate fruition.
I don't know. It's just knowing my own mom. My mom would be like, "Yeah, you think you're pulling a fast one on me, but I'm the cool mom and I know things. But I'm also not going to condemn you, like, because that's how she, that's her like mom game plan is like, if I'm cool and chill, then you'll tell me more things and I don't have to like figure them out and like.
Yes, son.
So like, there's definitely a like cool parent. That's a way to parent. that's just a parent type.
Yeah. And Evermore also commented that, like, clearly Samson wants Marcus and Thomas to learn from each other, and that's why he pairs them up and stuff, but, like, I wrote this down because I'm like, doesn't it seem like Thomas really needs to learn from Marcus? Like, why? Like, Thomas is doing great on his own, and everyone's just like, we praise him so much. So, like, why does he need to, like, does he really need to open up?
I mean, I think there's certainly a concern that Thomas is perhaps overly,
He has a PhD already.
Not that he's overly educated, but that he's overly uptight in the way that...
I guess so, but it doesn't seem like anyone actually like saying that's a problem with him. Anyway, whatever. XXX, Miss XXX on the site also said, great podcast episode. I'm definitely looking forward to everyone's reaction to the season overall. And what I bolded was, I agree that the first arc isn't very strong and leaves a lot to be desired. However, I do believe that things pick up rather quickly after the intro arc and all the characters get better later. I do rank Data Squad as my second, third highest season, so I'm looking forward to future episodes. So guys, just letting us know, like, I think characters get better and stuff.
They do get better.
Yeah, so I mean, we've seen episode 18 at this point, and yeah, I think the plot does pick up. But looking back, I do kind of like these episodes more than I thought it would. These are all the episodes like
no. There's definitely a turning point, and then it's definitely somewhere in 502, like halfway through those episodes, they start getting better. But the next couple episodes that we cover, I'm still like, no, this isn't good.
So the last comment was from Super Greet and With the Will, and they said, so there's talk about the Digimon Abridged stuff. We're confused with the different versions and stuff, and apparently there's the Digimon Abridged made by Team 4-Star was, like, there was initially April Fool's jokes, which were based, like, there was an Abridgimon April Fool's joke that starred some of I think some of the Team Four Star people in Little Kuribo, even.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they kept doing some of those later on or something. And so Tsurugi said they don't like those. They don't like the humor of those, but Tri-Abridged is different. And so it's about Tri-Abridged. I think what people like about the Tri-Abridged is that, similar to Team Four Star with Dragon Ball Z Abridged, is that it feels like there is genuine love behind it, with reference to past material in both dialogue and use of both dub and sub music. So I think that makes sense. That, like... That reminds me of, like, just the other day I saw Little Kuribo talking about a Yu-Gi-Oh! Moment. And something you might think from just watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge is that Little Kuribo, like, it's, like, always making fun of the dub and stuff. But I think what we might not get from that is that, like, he genuinely loves Yu-Gi-Oh! And genuinely loved the dub.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so there's... I think that's another reason that Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge is so successful, is that, like, it comes from a place of love. And it's mocking something it loves, too. And...
I mean, that's my favorite type of, like, electronic dance music. Stuff that makes fun of electronic dance music, but also genuinely loves it.
That was a hard turn there.
You know it.
But, okay, so this is, I found this interesting to hear, because something that actually put me off from Tri-Abridged was, like, we talked about that, like, quote-unquote hubris of, like, thinking you're making something better than the original material.
Yes.
And, I don't know, I think what I, like, what this pinpointed to me is that, like, what I actually find unsettling about that is that it didn't seem like it came from a place of love. It seemed like they were like, I don't like Try.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making a better Try.
Yes.
And that is what concerned me. But they're saying that this person's initial take, at least, is that it comes from a place of love. So maybe I'm interested to give it another chance. And so to see if it does have that love in there too. But yeah. And anyway, so on to their comments about the actual podcast. On the first episode, proper 501, I think these are a good first few episodes. They introduce our main players, we get some motivation behind their actions, and of course, Agumon being the gullible food lover we know and love. So I thought...
Agumon.
It's weird because, like, Agumon is so... I feel we have so much, like, familiarity with this food-loving Agumon because of Try, and...
Can you eat it?
That's... Is that from this episode? Yeah, yeah. No, so next, it's from 502.
It's 502.
502, spoiler, lead into that. Yeah, I'm so curious to hear if the...
What's a reboot? Can you eat it?
Like, did the... Because I totally imagine that whoever's working on the script and stuff for Try went back and watched all the adventure stuff to find loose ends they could tie together. But did they go back and watch Savers to...
Maybe.
I kind of think they just, like, accidentally stumbled on the same idea. Twice. Anyway, so we have questions, but we ran long already, so we're going to get to them next time. So for now, we're going to close it out. If you have any comments on this episode, if you disagree with us about Marcus, if you think Marcus is the best boy and we're all wrong.
I mean, clearly many people think Marcus is the best boy and we're very wrong.
Okay. If you have reasons why we're wrong, we're really interested to hear them and really interested to hear people defend him. And if we get... Yeah, we'll get interesting comments.
We'll see,
read them in the next episode.
Yeah, the issue is that, like, lots of people point out, like, they think the best thing about Marcus is the exact thing that I hate about Marcus. So I'm like, I just don't think that we're going to agree. Like, I don't think we can come to an understanding. like, particularly May and Adam liking how protective he is of his family. I'm like, no, that's actually one of the things that highly turns me off to him.
It's something that I hadn't really considered, but, like, I really, really, really hate that aspect of Riverdale. There's a character in Riverdale who's in high school and is like, I need to protect my family.
Yeah.
And, like, I basically stopped watching Riverdale at the point in this latest season where, like, his dad gets shot and he's, like, this kid who's in high school that's, like, so upset that he couldn't attack the guy who shot his dad. And, like, you don't... And then, like, the episode ends with him, like, standing in front of his dad's door with a bat. He's gonna protect his dad from this, like...
Yeah, there's
No. What I find so frustrating about that isn't the protection, is the, like, kids acting like they have the weight of the world on their shoulders, and that they need to act, like, super mature and, like, do everything like adults. I don't feel like this from Marcus, because I guess it's so childish.
No, the thing,
like,
that comes from Marcus is that I feel like he's just holding people back with his protectiveness.
He's holding people back, and he's also, like, yeah. I still think it's entertaining, though. It's not good for a girl person. But anyway, send all the thoughts to, you can leave comments at pettages.com/501.5. You can also send us thoughts to us on we are pettages on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook, and you can also email anything to pettages@gmail.com.
Special thanks to Xteranimon for our new Season 5 Agumon artwork. And a quick shout-out to our Champion Ultimate and Mega supporters on Patreon. Diabjomon, Dizzy Bizumi, Joe Kido, Kailudamon, Sam Kuwagamon, Andy Lusamon, David Graumon, and Marcus.
And if people want to follow us on Twitter or on the internet, where are you, Ashley?
I'm AshMcD00, and I have a new podcast called Shoujo and Chow. It's at Shoujo and Chow.
And I am JefflyJeff on Twitter, and I don't have a new podcast called Shonen in Hell.
He's working on it, though.
Oh, I'm not working on it. And if people want to find Ash, they can come to Israel.
Yeah.
And don't stay tuned for our Cybersuit stream because we're in Israel.
Because we're in Israel and that's not
and a good And I think this is way late. Like, this is, we're recording this like way late Sunday time because it's Monday. Anyway.
Oh, it's not Sunday anymore.
Well, it's Sunday. Oh, yeah, it's not Sunday anymore. Anyway, stay tuned tomorrow/in a couple hours for a main Data Squad pod covering episodes 6 through 11, aka CSI Cyber. Bye.
Bye.
And remember, never stop the development.